Quarter past 8, you are listening to Sabah al-Muslim on Radio Islam International. Time now for the Big Picture program, and joining us on the line we have Brother Bukir Dawji. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You are sounding quite well despite your protests yesterday.
I got a gale force flu. Let's just grip me now, Mona.
Okay, I suppose Palace dominated headlines for most of the week. Your take?
نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم أما بعد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
جمع بيان بيج نايت بيان
بزرگو بھائیو اور بینو السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Now isn't that an amazing greeting eh? السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته It has so much of depth of meaning than just saying things like how's it or maybe morning That's the popular one. Eh? Mm. You go to work, enter the office, and announce to everyone, morning, and they all reply, morning. Well, it's 9 o'clock at the start of the day. What else can it be but morning? I'd like to respond. Sometimes I think of responding by saying, no, really? Sheikh Qassam, hey, I'm so relieved that you know that it's morning. I was quite confused, but now everything is clear. Please do tell me when it's afternoon. You are such an amazing person to have such knowledge. I wonder, dear listeners, what the response will be. Mm. But I digress. Let me get back to Assalamu Alaikum. When you really ponder upon it, you will realize that it's such an appropriate greeting. What does it say? It doesn't say, I wish you good health. That's of course, a greeting, a prayer for you to be well. But then again, you may have good health and no job and battling to make ends meet, so you wake up every day stressed out, wondering how to put food on the table. So you don't have peace. You don't have peace of mind. What if I greet you with, hope you have lots of money? Well, again, you may be financially well off, but your son may be a drug addict and mixing with the wrong people and so on. So you are constantly worried, so you are not at peace. What if I say I wish you, with the greeting, morning, which actually is a shortened form, I hope you have a good morning, no hassles, boss doesn't catch you sleeping at your desk and so on. Well, what about the afternoon? Hmm? And, you know, Australians always say, good day, mate, that covers the whole day. What about the night? You can't sleep, you are restless, you wake up in the morning feeling tired, no peace of mind, not relaxed. Which brings me to the point. Assalamu alaikum. Indeed is a dua. I wish you peace. It is a prayer that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala must grant you peace in your life. Isn't that great? That covers everything. That's what we want. Peace. Peace. While maybe being wealthy or peace with little money, and no health problems, no family problems, nothing. Assalamu alaikum. May you have peace in your life. You know, I like it. Some time ago, people used to say assalamu alaikum, but in recent years, more and more people are saying the full version, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And that's so wonderful. It's a bit longer than morning, but sounds great. Of course, occasionally, I do hear some lazy ones who compress the whole thing into just one word, and then they stretch it out to make it long. Okay, Abi, I'll talk to you later. Salam. Now, that's quite funny. Eh? Salam. Anyway, the intention is still there. Wishing you peace. But I'll just share before we get into the topic that has us all a buzz on social media and elsewhere, the attack on or in Paris. Of course, everyone has a view about this episode, so here's my 2 cents worth. What do I think about the killings? Short answer, of course, it's terrible. Of course, that's the obvious answer. It's bad to kill innocent people. Question 2, do I feel a great deal of sympathy welling up in me for those who were killed? Am I very sad? Am I in a state of mourning, grieving? And the short answer is no. And here's the reason why. I am quite underwhelmed by the events in France, because I, and of course all of us, have been exposed to years and years of atrocities. My first real exposure to shocking death and destruction was the first Gulf War, 1991, when old man Bush dropped 88,000 tons of bombs over 42 days and destroyed everything in Iraq. Many described it as Iraq was bombed back to the 16th century. And that, of course, that was pure terrorism. That atrocity was also based on lies. A society totally destroyed because of some evil plan hatched by evil people in Washington. Then I went to Iraq myself to see how bad was the destruction. I was shocked. And something that was more horrible was the use by Americans of a weapon of mass destruction, depleted uranium. Bombs and missiles were made out of depleted uranium and dropped on Iraq. The bombs exploded, and of course the bombs exploded and they killed people. But the dust of these bombs, the depleted uranium dust, causes cancer. People drank water contaminated with depleted uranium. Iraqis breathed in the air poisoned with DU, and they were, of course, dying from that, falling down and dying. Let me repeat something I spoke about before. My visit to a hospital in Basra, a city in the south of Iraq, a doctor took me on a tour of the cancer wards. People were dying of lung cancer and stomach cancer, just about everything. Then he took me to the children's cancer ward. It was the most heartbreaking experience of my life. As we walked past each bed, the doctor told me about the condition of each little child. Each child was sitting in the lap of its mother, who was sitting on the bed. The doctor said, this child has 2 weeks to live. Then he moved on and said, this child has stomach cancer and has 1 week to live. The mothers just looked at us. They didn't understand English, but they knew it was bad. And then we stopped at a bed where a mother sat cradling her two-year-old daughter, a beautiful, beautiful child. I can still picture her. In fact, her image is permanently etched in my head. The mother looked at us with a very sad face. A look of hope was still there. The doctor said, the cancer has spread to her brain. Last week, we had to remove one of her eyes. As the child looked at me with her one bright, beautiful eye, I couldn't stop my tears. It was absolutely devastating. Devastating, indeed. I will never, ever forget that shocking episode. Even right now, it makes me shudder when I think about it. And since then, we have been shocked by many atrocities, Maulana. Remember Bosnia? Then we had Kosovo. I was asked to give a lecture on Kashmir in Pretoria a long time ago, and I knew nothing about it, zero. And when I began researching it, I was absolutely shocked. Shocked. 80,000 people killed over the past 15 to 18 years. Shocking. I called my lecture Kashmir, the Silent Genocide. Silent because I never knew what was happening, and I'm sure many in the world also didn't really know the scale of the repression. I was right there in 2003, right in the middle of George Bush, the shrub, his attack on Iraq. He called it shock and awe. Well, I was shocked, very shocked indeed. You have to be in the middle of a war zone with bombs falling all around you to know what real terrorism is all about. The entire Iraqi nation was terrorized by George Bush. The terrorism suffered by the people of Gaza is beyond shocking. F-16s flattening 10-story buildings, entire neighborhoods turned to rubble. I can go on and on about the terrorism that we have witnessed over the past 20 years. Each time something terrible happens, I am shocked. So please excuse me if my senses are a little dulled. My emotions have slowly been numbed by each atrocity. The shock factor is not there anymore. And therefore, I somehow I have no great feelings of sympathy. No great feelings of sympathy rise up within me for the Paris killings. And let me explain why. I have a set amount of sympathy inside me, a limited quantity. And so I have to distribute, I have to spread it out equally for all the terrible things happening in the world. Every morning I open a website about what's happening in Palestine, and every morning I read about one or two young people killed. On Tuesday, two 20-year-old men, young men, were killed. And I stop and think about them. I stop and think about their mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, the grief, the pain, the feeling of disbelief that son or brother is gone forever. I stop and think about the three-year-old killed by the, what's it called again, the Israeli Defense Force. Defense, eh? My granddaughter Maria, 1.5 years old, she clings to me and cries as I'm going to the office in the morning. And when I come home, she runs up to me and hugs me. Dada! Dada! And she's learning words. So cute. What do you want, Maria? And she says, everything. Sometimes she looks for me, calling, A.B., A.B. Nothing is cuter than that. And when I read about a two-year-old girl in Gaza blown to bits and the parents trying to collect the body parts, it shocks me. It grieves me intensely. There, Maria is no more. Who can ever remove the pain from their hearts? Impossible. So, Molana, as I was saying, I have a limited amount of sympathy inside me. Maybe it's just a bucketful. And I have to every day spread it equally. No discrimination. Everyone's got to get a share of my sympathy. The 12 people who were killed in Nigeria yesterday, the dozens killed in Beirut, the 4 killed in Myanmar, the 54 killed in Yemen, the 8 killed in Somalia, the 78 killed in Pakistan. So, dear listeners, I have to spread the sympathy equally. And yes, I do have some for those who died in Paris. Just some. The bucket is not very big. And one has to be fair to everyone, right? And another thing, my sense of shock about what happened in Paris is somewhat diminished, somewhat dulled when I see the red carpet rolled out for Netanyahu by Obama in Washington. My sense of sympathy is dulled, jaded, when I see Modi inspecting a ceremonial guard of honor when he is welcomed by David Cameron in London. My feelings of empathy evaporate when I see Sisi walking the red carpet in London or Salman in Washington. How is this possible? Why is this okay? Where's the justice? Where's the good sense? Excuse me, Salman? He's bombing Yemen to smithereens. But hey, he just signed a $6 billion weapons deal that puts a huge smile on David Cameron's face. And now to a very important point. Do I condemn the attacks in Paris? Will I come out and speak out against it? Will I write a statement to the media? Absolutely not. Of course, I did say that what happened in Paris was very bad. But I won't be coming out to condemn it. What's the point? What new can I say? These killers don't represent Islam. These killers are distorting the teachings of Islam. These killers are a tiny group with warped thinking. Please don't judge all of us by the actions of a few misguided people. These people feel the pain of what's happening in Muslim lands, and therefore these Muslim lands are being attacked and occupied by the West, and therefore they are doing all of these things. Muslims are peace-loving. Islam is a religion of peace. Is that what I have to say? Well, We said all of this many times before, many, many times. Actually, I think we should release just one line statement when such acts of barbarism happen, like what happened in Paris. Dear world, please refer to all our previous statements of condemnation, for example, when the Charlie Hebdo incident happened. Am I being cynical? Of course I am. I'm very cynical, and I make no excuses for it. Of course, all Muslim organizations around the world have released statements of condemnation. Good for them, I say, good for them. I just read one yesterday in the Times newspaper. I'm not sure whether it's authentic. The headline said, Top Muslim Cleric on Paris. The statement was written by Shawki Alam, the Grand Mufti of Egypt. Let me read to you just some parts. It says here, I was as shocked as any sensible human being would have been when I learned about the senseless, heinous, appalling, and cowardly acts in Paris this week. This attack is shocking and offends the conscience of every sane person, regardless of their religious identity. I wish to stress categorically and unequivocally our complete solidarity and unwavering support for the French people in their plight and their determination to combat terror. The innocent victims and their families are in our thoughts and prayers. The whole Muslim community has been in a state of mourning with the rest of the French people, as a deed of this magnitude is in reality an attack on all humanity, as our holy books emphasizes. That's just the first few lines of what the Mufti said. Well, dear listeners, after I read that, I said, really? Huh? Really, eh? Well, listen, Motabaji, when are you going to release a statement condemning the imprisonment of thousands of Egyptians tortured in the prisons who are opposed to the regime in Cairo? When are you going to release a statement condemning the bulldozing of hundreds of homes of very, very poor people in the Sinai on the border with Israel? When, dear Sheikh, are you going to condemn the closing of the Rafah border, which is the only entry point into Gaza, and when it's closed, and all the tunnels are also dug up and covered, the lifeline for the suffering people of Gaza are dug up and covered. The blockade of Gaza by both Israel and Egypt, strangling the Palestinians to death, waiting for your statement, dear Mufti. If you don't condemn that, then there is nothing good about you, Mufti. In fact, I would rename you Grand Munafik, hypocrite. So let me ask the question again. What value do the release of statements condemning the Paris attacks have? What value? I have read dozens of them, many from Muslim organizations in America and Europe. My feeling is that they have little or no impact whatsoever. Firstly, most of the media don't even report these statements. So it's no wonder that people keep coming up regularly and asking, why are Muslims so silent? Why are they not speaking out about these terrible deeds? Secondly, yes, some sensible people, a small number, may understand our message that this is not Islam and that they are these people are criminal, committing criminal acts and so on. So they are persuaded that all Muslims are not bad. So that's okay, that's fine. But our statements of condemnation are drowned out by the tsunami of negative comments and images and the plain reality of what is witnessed by ordinary people in the media. Ordinary people are not going to pause and analyze and look at all the arguments and study what Islam really is all about and so on. Not at all. They're going to see Muslims as potential killers, that their religion is barbaric. They are going to be very afraid. They are going to hate Muslims from disrupting their peaceful lives. They are not going to think, hey, we are disrupting their peaceful lives, the peaceful lives of Muslims in their countries in the Middle East, and so they are coming here to disrupt our peace. That tow truck driver or office worker comes home after a hard day at work. He kicks off his shoes, sips a beer, and watches people blowing themselves up on his TV screen. What's he going to say? Hey, we are killing them there, so they are killing us here. So all is fair in love and war. And I must remember to hug a Muslim tomorrow. The fact is, all he sees and hears is the word jihad, Islamist, Islamic State, and of course, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. So his conclusion is that these people and their religion needs to be wiped out. What does the media show? Well, Maulana, let me tell you something. From 4 o'clock this morning, while I was preparing for this program, I had CNN playing in the background. And what was on? Non-stop saturation coverage of the Paris attacks. Non-stop saturation coverage of the Paris attack. And non-stop comments from so-called experts on terrorism and Islam. Most of them talking absolute sheer nonsense. Plain rubbish. So, our beer-swilling American is watching this, as I was watching from 4 a.m., and then there comes along another expert on Islam, Ayan Hirsi Ali. Some of you may know her. She's a Somali who went to Holland because, and then she became very famous there for attacking Islam. She made a movie with another guy, demonizing Islam. I think it was called Fitna. She became, of course, she was a Muslim when she was in Somalia. And then, anyway, from Holland, she went to America, where the anti-Muslim brigade adopted her, and since then she has been going around speaking about how Islam is the problem, a danger to the world. Well, at 5:45, she came onto CNN, and they gave her around 15 minutes to speak her mind. She made some shocking claims. She said, are you listening? She said that these extremists are not doing anything different that Islam forbids. They're not doing anything that Islam forbids. No, no, no. She said, in her words, the uncomfortable truth is that they were only following the example of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Can you believe that? She says they were doing exactly what he, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, was doing and the example that he said. And her theme was very simple. It always is that Islam has to be reformed. She's very well spoken, she's very articulate, and she always says how she grew up as a devout Muslim until she became a teenager and then realized how Islam was a terrible religion. So, our beer drinker hears this and says, aha, aha, here's a Muslim exposing Islam as being barbaric. But he will not read the statements of the Islamic Society of North Africa, North America. And even if he did, he would dismiss it as nonsense that Islam is a religion of peace. He sees on TV nice-looking white people who lost loved ones there in Paris. They are crying. They're hugging each other. He hears of how they are bravely taking their loss. So much of grieving. He also grieves with them. His people killed by these brown people who have a dark religion, evil religion. And then he hears at 6:15 today, Ben Carson, a black man who is campaigning to be president of the United States, who recently said that he will never accept that a Muslim can be the president of the United States. At 6:15 on CNN this morning, he said that we, the United States, must screen Syrian refugees wanting to enter the United States because there could be rabid dogs amongst them. And then he smiled. So please, please excuse me if I am cynical and consider letters of condemnation to be pointless. And of course, occupying center stage is IS, the so-called Islamic State. People, of course, are free to decide what this group is. They can support it if they want to. No, I have no problem with that. To each his own. And of course, it's their prerogative to do so. But I also have my own views, and that IS is neither Islamic nor a state. I said it before that this group has been deliberately created in order to create mayhem, instability in the region. It was created to derail the so-called Arab Spring. The Arab Spring was going to get rid of all the tinpot dictators, friends of the West, and usher in a new era of democracy and stability. Stability would lead the people to objecting to Western hegemony and their interest, Western interest in the Middle East, and of course would also be a danger to Israel. And I am worried about this also, concerned about this. So the idea of the caliphate resonated with young people. And so they went across from Europe and elsewhere and joined up. And some returned to attack civilians in their countries. A double effect, cause instability in the Middle East and paint a barbaric image of Islam. Somewhere in the West, there's a group of people having a great time, laughing at how their plans are unfolding. Now, about the Paris attack, I heard a lot of conspiracy theories, and I'm not into them at all. Some are totally ridiculous. We have conspiracy theories. In fact, we love conspiracy theories. But something that made me fall off my chair, Molana, it was an article in our newspaper, the Daily News. Let me read just a quick extract. Do we have a few minutes?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So I got the article in front of me, the Daily News, and it said something quite amazing. It says here, 2 weeks ago, the mayor of Molenbeek ordered the closure of a neighborhood bar where Brussels police had found young men dealing drugs and smoking dope over the summer. Last Friday, the owner blew himself up at another laid-back corner cafe, this time in Paris, on a mission of retribution from Islamic State. Brahim Abdus Salam's journey from barkeeper to suicide bomber remains a mystery, along with the whereabouts of his younger brother, Salah, now on the run as Europe's most wanted man. But until recently, the manager of Brahim's bar, Le Bourgeonnais. The brother sold the business six weeks ago. There is a seemingly disconnect between the ownership by Muslims, whose religion forbids the use of alcohol, tobacco, and tobacco, of a bar where drugs were being dealt on the quiet street in the low-rent Brussels borough of Molenbeek, who have become the focus of manhunt for violent Islamists with ties to Syria. And one of his friends is also interviewed, Hisham, 25-year-old. He echoed what others said. They smoked. They didn't go to the mosque or anything. We saw them every day at the cafe. We played cards. We talked about football. We talked about everything. Nothing jihadist at all. Now, this is an extract. So, dear listeners, that's a very big question mark, isn't it? 2 weeks ago, they were running an alcohol and drug den, and then suddenly they become jihadists. Icona, something smells there, Maulana, something smells. It reminds me of one of the so-called 9/11 bombers who left his Quran in the bar before he flew the planes into the Twin Towers. And did you know that to get to Jannat, you need a passport, Maulana? Yeah, that's why they carry it when they do a jihadist so-called suicide attack. Here's a simple equation. The West created Daesh, Islamic State. Daesh draws in young people, indoctrinates them. These youngsters are told to go back and kill. Who gets the blame? Islam. And then we are told repeatedly, Muslims must do more to educate and control these young people. It's the responsibility and duty of Muslims to do more. Well, here's my message to people who say this. You, the people of the West, must do more to stop your war criminal leaders, the Tony Blairs and George Bushes, from making the world a dangerous place. Stop their lies and warmongering, and stop the military-industrial complex that makes billions out of conflict. You must do more to stop your barbaric acts of terrorism against Muslims. And as I always say, leave the Muslims alone, and they will leave you alone. Waakhir da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Well, that was like a 15 Shaban bayan, but worth it. Very enlightening.
Alhamdulillah.
You know, normally when Maulanas give a bayan, after it is a chow.
All right, so I'll be coming to your place.
Most welcome.
You must have dal and rice and papad and salad, fried brinjals, fried peppers, aloo fry, and for safai, for a little bit of extra, you need to have a small piece of fried fish, Molan.
I'm having roulade.
Soji. Let's see, when did I have that last?
Some years ago.
First time and last time.
I actually forgot about it. One of our listeners reminded me the other day. Maybe Dawji normally talks about the roulade. Light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, I like this photo that someone sent me on WhatsApp. You probably saw it. A chap is at a demonstration holding up a sign. My wife is not a terrorist, but I'm still afraid of her. Okay, let me read to you very quickly in 1 minute. Let me tell you another one. Ronnie is driving up to Marisburg in his Cortina. And he's going to visit his son. They're staying in Marisburg. So while he's driving, then on the side of the road, there's a guy all dressed in red, all dressed in complete red. I don't know if he's EFF or what. And he waves for him to stop. So Ronnie pulls over and says, "Yes, can I help you?" And the man said, "I am the red mampara of the highway. You got something to eat?" And Ronnie smiles and he gives him a sandwich and he drives away. 5 minutes later, he comes across another guy. This guy is dressed completely in yellow, and he waves at Ronnie to stop. So Ronnie pulls over, and he says, "Yes, can I help you?" He says, Ronnie is a bit irritated. And the guy says, and Ronnie says to him, "What can I do for you?" And so the guy said, "I am the yellow mampara of the highway. You got something to drink?" And then Ronnie hands him a can of Coke, and he drives away full speed. And as he goes, and he sees another guy dressed all in blue, he's now very irritated. The guy pulls him over. Ronnie stops, opens the window, and said, "Hey, let me guess, eh? You are the mampara of the highway, right? And you want something, right?" And the man said, "Hey, you've been speeding. Show me your driver's license."
Uncle Abe, as always, jazakallah for your time. Have a great week.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the Big Picture program with AB Dawji, 13 to 9.